This is Ron Paul's Podcast Nation.
It's just one crisis after another in Washington. First, it's the fiscal cliff, and that's followed by the sequester, and that's followed by... And the illusion is that Washington is capable of fixing any of this at all. I'm Charles Goyette. We'll cut through the nonsense with Ron Paul, Ron Paul's Podcast Nation, right after this.
This is Ron Paul. Thanks to our sponsors for making these podcasts available to you.
You went to bed with your life savings in the bank. You woke up broke. That's because an ID thief stole your identity, took over your bank accounts, and stole everything, including your retirement. And then it hits you. Wait, why didn't your identity theft protection help stop this? Because you didn't have the most comprehensive ID theft protection service available. LifeLock Ultimate. LifeLock goes way beyond guarding your identity, your good name, your credit. Those are essential, but now LifeLock is the only identity theft protection company that monitors bank accounts for takeover fraud. Visit LifeLock.com or call and mention Ron10, that's Ron10, Ron10, no spaces, for 10% off your LifeLock Ultimate membership. Call 1-800-480-8210. That's 1-800-480-8210, 1-800-480-8210.
Well, the sequester finally hit, and we're all still alive to talk about it.
Boy, they sure hyped it up. The sequester was going to be the end of the world, but this is generally the way they do things in Washington. They scare people, whether it's in foreign policy or economic policy. Scare the people, scare the Congress, and they will obey, and they'll spend more money. So this whole idea of frightening people about the sequester, I think the main goal was to get people to raise taxes, thinking that this would be a horrible thing if they didn't get more money in. But there was so much misinformation when it came to the sequester. You know, they were talking about saving money. They put this into effect last summer, and it was supposed to put pressure on the Congress to actually cut money. But that's where the misinformation came in. There really isn't any plan to cut significantly at all. What they're talking about is a very, very small cut in a proposed increase. For instance, if we allowed the baseline budgeting to continue in the next 10 years, the budget would go up $2.5 trillion. If the sequester goes through, it would be $2.4 trillion. That's over 10 years. And they're yelling and screaming that this is too radical. Well, if they had a proper-sized government, they would really be cutting a lot more than that. But at the rate we're going now, the budget goes up about 7% per year. If sequestration goes through, it's 6.9%. So it's hardly a change at all. But the other fiction that's associated with this is that this is the end. If sequestration goes through, that they're locked in. They're never locked in. They always have supplemental. They always have emergency budget during the year and spending. So if there's a war breaks out, or if the war gets bigger, emergency spending. If there's a financial crisis, emergency spending. If there's a hurricane, emergency spending. And everybody is so concerned about, well, both sides of the aisle, they're concerned about spending cuts in the military. But really, they're not talking about very much. It's proposed increases they're talking about. And the whole thing is, they haven't even worked on 2013 budget. So they can cancel that out if they want. You know, it reminds me of what happened in the early 80s. There was an effort with Republicans and the country who wanted to cut back and balance the budget. And I remember voting on a bill that had a significant cut in food stamps. And that was a real achievement because who could ever vote and cut food stamps? So it passed. But what happened was after 10 months, they ran out of money, and then they had an emergency appropriation. So it's what you hear from Washington is so much deception, trying to fool the people, and yet I think the people are getting sick and tired of it. If people think we're spending too much money, Congress should have the responsibility. cutting back and doing something about it. Right there, right now, there's no evidence that that is going to happen. The spending looks like it's going to continue for a long, long time. And if we don't address the real problem is the purpose of government. If we think our government should be the policeman of the world and run an endless welfare state, endless welfare for the rich and the poor, we can't solve this, and nobody in Washington wants to give this up. They don't want to change the military-industrial complex, right or left. And right or left really doesn't cut welfare. They talk about it, but they don't. So that's where the problem is. And quite frankly, the real reason for that is there's so little respect for the restraints placed on the Congress and on the federal government as a whole, and that is the restraints placed on them by the Constitution. There's too much just general ignoring of those restraints and the rules of law, and that's how we got ourselves into this mess. So I see this whole debate, this whole thing about the sequester as just being a distraction, and they're not even dealing with the real problem that we have today, and that is government is just too big.
The rhetoric during the whole debate was so over the top that it really should have tried the patience of any reasonable person, as you know so well. Of course, this stuff comes from both sides of the aisle. The Democratic side, there was Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta. He said if the sequestration cuts went ahead, the United States risked becoming a second-rate power. John McCain, a Republican, said that the cuts literally threatened our ability to defend the nation. Really? Literally? And a second-rate power? This is all very funny because the numbers show that even with the cuts, the U.S. is going to spend as much on defense as at least the next 13 nations combined.
Yeah, and some people have a pretty good statistic. We probably spend equal to everybody else put together, and that's a large sum of money. But this this whole idea that there's actually going to be cuts, if they want a good example, and I'd advise the Republicans especially to look at this, is what Eisenhower did. You know, Eisenhower was not a non-interventionist, and he knew something about war, but he also knew something about the military-industrial complex. But he actually cut, in real terms, the military budget by 30%. I wonder what John McCain would think about that if we had a real cut. But they're not cutting anything, and they're only cutting, you know, what the proposed increase is. If all these so-called cuts went through, instead of the budget going up 20%, it would go up 18%. And that's what they're worrying about, a 2% cut off of 20% automatic increase. So that's where all the deceitfulness is. And I think that if they were serious about cutting, I mean, it wouldn't be difficult. They say, well, it should, how can we do this cut across the board? Well, I think the Congress should do the cutting, and I don't think they should give the power to the president to pick and choose. It's Congress's responsibility. What they could do is just cancel that F-35. There's a Pentagon report out that shows that if they keep doing what they're doing, the total program for the F-35, which will never be a practical airplane, never be used, it will spend $1.5 trillion on this plane. But this really demonstrates the problem, because conservatives say they don't like Keynesianism and the liberals' big spenders, but they like military Keynesianism. Now, the F-35 is built in about 44 states. They were wise enough to put it in every state, so then every delegation has to vote for the job. So it's a jobs program. Building weapons that aren't used, that's just a destruction of the economy and drains the economy and takes that wealth away from productive effort. Maybe that money should be building hospitals or going into education. Who knows where it would go? But instead, they spend this money and they say, oh, look, they're making profits. But this whole philosophy of government spending as being a benefit, it also is a gross mischaracterization of the GDP, because if you pump a lot of money into these weapon systems, even if the weapon systems aren't used or they get blown up, if you build a bomb and blow it up, that goes into a positive GDP. We spent all these billions of dollars building bases over in Afghanistan. That increased our GDP. Now we're tearing the bases down. That goes into GDP because it costs money to tear them down. And so the GDP figures are very distorted. And that's why there's so many people suffering. And the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class is getting poorer, and the rich are getting richer. And that's why we need major work done on understanding free market economics and sound money and what the role of government ought to be.
Well, anybody who thinks that the Pentagon should be off limits, maybe they could remember Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on September 10th, 2001, when he held a press conference and said that the Pentagon couldn't account for $2.3 trillion. So 9/11 was the next day and the story got crowded out of the news. How about Secretary of Defense Robert Gates more recently when he said that he didn't know how many people work at the Pentagon, he didn't know how much money they spend, and neither does anybody else?
You know, if the money had to be spent for us to be safe, that would be one thing. But they don't know what's going on. They're wasting all this money, and it doesn't do anything to make us safe. Matter of fact, I think too much of that money makes us less safe. But, you know, after 9/11, I believe the military budget has essentially doubled. So cutting back a little bit from that wouldn't be a big deal. This is why Eisenhower thought it was wise to cut back on military spending after the Korean War was over. So this is a significant problem for us, and unless we get a hold of this, our problems are going to get much, much worse.
Well, we bounce from one very short-term crisis to the next. First, it's the fiscal cliff that dominates the media for 60 days or so, and then it's the sequester for a few weeks, and that's followed by the spending authorization. That, in turn, is going to be followed by the national debt ceiling hike, and all of this diverts our attention from the real long-term economic problems of this country. Now, it's all very good for the talking heads. It's great for cable news, new fodder for the talk shows every couple of weeks, but they never get to the heart of the problem, do they?
No, they avoid that, and I think they do it on purpose. You know, I don't think they want to hear about it, because the correction for a lot of people see it as painful. You know, the one word I don't like to use when I tell people, if we make our corrections, you got to sacrifice. But if you're a productive person and you're working hard and you're earning a living and trying to make it on your own, if we slash your income tax or get rid of your income tax, get the regulators off your back, and all of a sudden that you do better. That's not a sacrifice. What they're talking about is if we quit the bailing out of these unsuccessful business people and bankers who ripped us off and got us into this mess, yeah, I guess that's a sacrifice to them. But it, in a technical sense, it's not a sacrifice. It's just taking away from them what they shouldn't have. Unfortunately, though, this the pain and the penalty is passed on to the poor and the middle class in the system that we have today.
Thank you very much, Ron. And that's Ron Paul's Podcast Nation. I'm Charles Goyette.
Ron Paul's Podcast Nation is available on iTunes. See more at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.